Is this thing working? Is it working? Welcome to take four of Tom Harris USA, episode number 66. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. And this is the fourth time I've tried starting this show. And it's just one of those shows tonight. And it probably doesn't help that I'm running a little bit behind. And the show is due to be posted tomorrow. So I kind of have to rush the show out. And I don't like rushing. But this has been a crazy, crazy week. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a later part of the program. But a lot has been going on this week. Now, I have a couple of announcements regarding the podcast. Now, I have a couple of interesting things, but I'm by far the most exciting part of the news that I have to share with you today is that Tom Harris USA is now on the schedule of United Kingdom Radio, and you can go listen to my show. Of course, if you're listening to this, you're probably either listening to it there or you're listening to it from my site, and it doesn't matter to me where you listen to it as long as you do. And anyway, you can hear my show at 16:30 UK time, 4:30 in the afternoon if you're in the UK, or 10:30 on Monday morning Central time here in the US, right before Yannick Clay's show. And this is the only pre-recorded show on the United Kingdom radio schedule at the moment. Now, that may change. I have been talking about doing a live show for some time. I've been kind of pondering ideas for how it would actually be different from this show, with the exception of having callers, which is something I never do on this show. And so I'm kind of thinking and kind of pondering as to how the best way to start a live show would be, how I would put it together, what it would consist of, and again, how it would provide something different from the stuff I normally do. And those are things that I've been kind of working on. At the same time, I have actually been very, very busy over the last couple of weeks doing bits and pieces for other people's podcasts. Of course, giving the feedback that I normally give to other people too, but that doesn't take up a sizable portion of my time. The next thing is that I was mentioned on the Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode number 67. One of my feedbacks was read. If you are interested in comics, and in particular DC Comics and the Legion of Superheroes, you definitely want to check those guys out. It's at legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. One of the people who hosts the show, Darren Newell, is a good friend of my friend Peter, and he lives up in Atlanta. So it's a lot of fun. And if you are into especially early 60s DC Comics, it is a great resource, I think, and it's a highly entertaining group of guys. There's four of them, two in Canada, two in the U.S., and it's very, very interesting to hear. So if you're listening as the result of that mention on the Legion of Substitute Podcasters, then welcome to my show, and you'll find the show is nothing like theirs. The other thing is I have a recorded segment actually on the Post-it Cast for this week. I'm going to give you the it's postitcast.com, and the episode is called PIC 011810 Feedback Cast. And there's some, most of the show is, of course, Michael Moss, the host, doing his normal stuff, and at the end there's a discussion of podcasting in general, and I recorded a little segment for that, talking about what I feel about podcasting, and I'm not going to play it here, because that's really for I made it for them. So you should go over and listen to Michael Moss's show and hear what he is saying about podcasting over there. So busy time, and I've also working on an episode of Plain Dudes Radio, and I've just recorded a segment for them as well. So busy week, podcast-wise. Another interesting piece of trivia is that this past week, I believe it was the 13th of January, I hit a record number of downloads for the day. I don't know that that really means anything, because of course, anytime somebody picks up the show for the first time, if they like the show, they tend to go back and download the older episodes. So whenever that happens, I get a spike in the normal numbers. But the 13th was, in fact, a record day for downloads for the show. So that's always gratifying to know. On the job front, there have been a number of little things happening. I have another interview coming up. I've had another piece of interest from another company, and I'm setting up an interview with them. However, what I was talking about last time is that my old job called me back, and they want me to come and help them out. Because the person who replaced me, the person who they hired to take my place after the changes in the company have completed, has left the company. She got her old job back, so they needed the help desperately, and they called me up, and so I'm doing some work on it, kind of on a consulting basis. It's not a full-time job. It really is just me going in and helping them out, and not really having this sort of formal employment, you know, deal going on with them, but I'm going in like as though I were going to work every day and you know, doing the work that I used to do. So it is very weird being back there. I never thought I'd be end up going back there, but it is that very, very strange feeling and being back there. But it is good actually to have things to do and not feel as though I'm wasting my whole day every day. So this may only be a temporary deal. In fact, it is a temporary deal. But it does give me something to do. Something productive to do. And I do feel that way when I'm unemployed. And it's one of those things that, you know, you feel as though you're spending your energy really for no benefit. And also, you know, tending to sleep late and, you know, you don't feel like you're being very productive. So it is good. I don't like working. Obviously I do. I do like working. I like getting up and going to work and being productive. I like to feel as though I've had a productive day, and today was a productive day. So, you know, it's always a good thing. And I also do hear other podcasts while I'm working. That's my preferred way to listen to them is while I'm doing something else. And office work is a great thing to be doing while you're listening to podcasts, because unless it's a very deep podcast, then it's something that you can listen to and not have to devote all of your attention, paying attention to it and keeping track of every single word that's being said. And if you hear something particularly interesting, you can go back and you can listen to it again, unless it's a live show. Now the problem I have with that though, and after this I'm not going to say any more about podcasting, is that when it comes to the live shows, like Yannick's show and Mikey's show and Lee Last's show, the Ross Patzelt show, and the Chris Reardon live show, it's frustrating not being able to call in because I don't have Skype at the office. And even if I did, I don't have a microphone. And even if I did, they probably wouldn't be very thrilled about me calling some internet radio show. So I'm listening, folks, and I am enjoying those shows, but I just can't call. And you know, it was frustrating because today there were a number of times when I would have called those other shows. Yannick said something on his show about your dreams. You know, what your dreams were when you were young. And I have a great answer to that, but you know, I can't call in and explain that. I guess I could send an email, but that's not the same, is it? It really isn't the same. And by the way, young Yannick, young guy from Germany is doing a show on United Kingdom Radio. You know, I have to say, you know, the first few episodes of his show were pretty rough. But I can see, you know, it's been a while since I've been able to listen to it. He seems so much more comfortable now, more confident now, going into the show. It's just a pleasure to watch him get better and better with every episode. It really is. And he said some very nice things about this show too. So Yannick, if you're listening, you know, stick to it, man. You're doing great. You know, and I think every show is better than the previous one. So that's a good goal. Just really, I'm out here, you know, rooting for you because that's really great. Lee Mills is now on United Kingdom Radio as well. So, welcome to, the UK radio lineup, Lee, along with me and hopefully, be able to be live on your show, or you can be live on my show when I start my live show. Now I'm hoping that Basil Botler will sign on to do a live show because I think that would be excellent. Anyway, I'm going to move along. I have an email here. But before I get to my email, one of my favorite internet sites is back. And if you folks remember, last winter, and I think it was specifically last October, that's October of 08, there was a litter of Shiba Inu puppies, six of them, that created an internet sensation. It was a big deal, and everybody was watching the puppies, and it was just really cute. And I have to admit, I wasted a lot of time watching those puppies. And and of course, if they could stay little forever, I'd probably be watching them still. However, there's great news for those of us who are fans of the Shiba 6, because there is a new litter now, and there are five of them, three tan ones and two cream-colored ones. And you can get there by going to ustream.tv/SF Shiba. It's the same mother as the previous litter, and they are just adorable. They're only just a few days old. Now, of course, for those of you listening on podcast and years in the future, then the dogs are all grown up now. So they're just beautiful little puppies, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch them, you know, grow up. Right now, they're very much in the sit there and nurse phase, so they're not very active right now, but they're certainly going to become more active later, like the last litter did, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch them grow for the next 6 months. It's going to be great. So anyway, I'm excited about that, and I wasted a lot of time watching the original Shiba 6, and I'm sure that these B team of Shiba puppies is going to be just as entertaining. Have a quick note here from Doug. Doug in Akeley, Iowa, who is a regular contributor to the program. Doug had this to say about episode number 65. Doug asks if my former employer could screw me over on my unemployment if I refuse to come back and help them. Well, I think the point is moot, because I actually have gone back and am helping them. Yeah, I suppose they could, and I'm kind of iffy about going back, and for the simple reason that they, you know, they let me go once, and, you know, what's to keep them from doing that again? And I, you know, the thing is, I'm going into this job situation with my former employer knowing that it's temporary. This is basically, it's a temp assignment that hasn't gone through a temp agency. So I'm not too worried about it. Because the understanding from the very beginning is that I'm not going to be sticking around, that I'm really just there to help them out, and that I can leave at any time I want, especially if I were to get another job. Now, if I were to get another job, the unemployment issue is completely irrelevant, because then I'd have another job. To be honest, it's nothing against the company, but I think I've had enough of that business, the being in the restaurant business and all that. I could probably eat my words later if I get another job working for a restaurant company. But, you know, with things the way they are within that company and things are changing within the company, I don't think there's really a place for me there long term. But I am happy to go in and give them a hand and try to help them out. And I honestly, I'm doing them a favor, so I don't think they're going to try to screw me over. Always be mindful, of course, that could happen. I don't think it will. I don't think that's worth their while. And I have another message from our good friend Leanne LG. And she had some comments on episode number 65. And she sends me a link to an article here. And this article comes from the Herald of Scotland. And it's over on the Herald of Scotland website. And the article is about the Orkney Islands, which I was talking about in the last episode. Now, I'm not going to talk about the specifics of the article or read the article out. But it's a real good one. And Leanne writes, it almost sounds as if you were the one who wrote this article. Yeah, I do kind of agree with you. I probably could have written. The Orkneys, of course, is a really, really interesting place and one that I really enjoyed. Anyhow, Leanne had this to say. Really enjoyed the program. Well, thank you, ma'am. I like it when, even after you've signed off, the desire to learn more, to travel more, to hear more lingers. Well, thank you, Leanne. That's very kind. Laughed out loud at the Elvish impersonators. How very funny. I bet a lot of people were groaning about that one. I may or may not have seen some of those many years ago in Waffle House at 2 a.m. Can't say for sure. You mean there were people trying to be elves at the Waffle House? That doesn't make sense. The job hunt sounds promising. Hooray! Joys to you, Leanne. P.S. My brother and I would love to be let loose in the U.K. with metal detectors, and mudlarking sounds fun. What, are they anoraks? I would enjoy that too, probably. I mean, it is sort of a kind of a geeky kind of hobby, like train spotting. But it would be fun. And that, now, for those of you who don't know what mudlarking is, it is the practice of digging a hole, and I think they're about 4 feet deep, these holes, in a riverbed. And it's usually the Thames near London, or in London, where the mud is very oxygen poor. And being oxygen poor, it preserves things for a very, very long time. And people will go down and they will dig a pit and find what they can find. And it sounds like you get absolutely filthy, I'm sure. But so you go down with a metal detector and dig these deep holes in the riverbed. And people pull all sorts of things up. I mean, they pull up, you know, perfectly preserved medieval shoes. You know, somebody loses a shoe in the muck, you know, and then they find it hundreds of years later. They'll find coins and jewelry and buttons and, you know, all sorts of metal objects that people have lost in the riverbed over the centuries. And, yeah, it sounds like great fun. And it sounds really dirty, but that's okay. You know, sometimes you have to do these things. It's worth it to get that. But getting back to the Orkneys for a second, it's really interesting that the writers of this article, they're talking about these places on the Orkney Islands. And I've been to these places, so it really is nice to read about them, written by somebody else's perspective, and knowing that I've seen the same thing they've seen and responding to it in a, frankly, a very similar way that I did. So LG is right. I mean, I could have written this article. One of the things he's talking about in here in particular is the chamber tomb of Maes Howe. And I mentioned that in the previous podcast. And it's a Neolithic burial mound. So we're talking about something that is thousands of years older than the pyramids and still very, very well preserved. The burials in the tomb are long gone, of course. I'm sure they were gone during the Viking times. You know, the Vikings probably just scooped the bones out and threw them away. But the Vikings used to break into the burial mound to have carnal relations. And they would write graffiti. And it's really interesting because I have this fascination for graffiti anyway. And the older the graffiti, the more interesting I find it. There's certain places where you see a lot of graffiti. And one of those places is Rome. You just see ancient graffiti everywhere. Pompeii especially, you know, because a lot of the graffiti was preserved by the fact that the entire city was buried in volcanic ash. But it's just really cool. You know, even in the ancient times, people liked to write on the wall, you know, and make their mark. And you know, Halfdan was here, which is scratched into the railing at Hagia Sophia in Istanbul, which, of course, back at that time was the holy city of Constantinople, and the Hagia Sophia being one of the holiest churches in Christendom. So, of course, it was a pilgrimage site, and people came from all over Europe there to make the pilgrimage on their way to the Holy Land, you know, the Crusades and so forth, and the Vikings were among them, and they left Viking runes carved into the railings. And it's really interesting. I mean, I've seen graffiti from the 1700s and the 1600s and, you know, in Croatia, you know, in the tomb of Diocletian, which is now a church. And it's really, really interesting to me. But this article about the Orkneys was really very cool. I had a great time when I was out there. Now, it was weird because I was there in the middle of winter, which is to say I was there in, I think it was the beginning of December. So not really the time when most people would actually want to go to the Orkneys. But I thought it was absolutely gorgeous. And by American standards, was very mild as far as weather goes. So it really was very neat to be out there. And the nice thing was I was pretty much the only tourist around. There wasn't anybody there when I first got there. I had the hostel all to myself for 2 nights. And then on the day I left, another couple arrived, and I guess they were going to spend the Christmas and New Year's there. But the day I went to go see all of the ruins, I had basically the guide to myself, and I had to pay more because normally they charge for a group of six, and I think they charge £60 for a group of six, you know, £10 each, and because I was the only one, I had to pay more, but I got an individual tour of everything. So it was well worth it in the long run. And of course we had great weather when I was there. We didn't have rain. It was, you know, a little misty one day, but that just adds to it. You know, that adds to the atmosphere, and it was terrific. Anyway, I feel compelled here that I need to shift gears a little bit. And the reason for that is that not all the news that I've had this week has been exciting about new shows or, you know, things that are going on in my life that are good and make me happy. This has been a sad week too. And those of you who are on Facebook and have pay any attention have noticed that my status for this past week has been rest in peace, Richard Tippett. And I thought I would talk about him for a moment because this was a friend of mine who passed away last Monday. Dick was the life partner of my good friend Dennis Shearer, the playwright, is a friend of mine from Florida. So I've known Denny going back all the way to 1988. Met him again here in Chicago after I moved here. I had no idea that he was here, and he had no idea I was here. And so when we ran into each other, it was kind of exciting. And he was with Dick then. And they had been together for about 3 years when I met them. Now this was, you know, probably 5 years ago. So they were together for about 8 years. So that's a good long relationship. Now Dick was not a young man. He was 82 years old. He suffered from a variety of problems that are typical for older people. And at some point in the past, I'm not sure exactly how far back, he had prostate cancer. And it had to have his prostate removed. And the assumption, and of course everybody proceeding on the basis of, is that he was now free of cancer. And sometime around October, he began exhibiting symptoms of back pain. This was something that became progressively worse, but he wouldn't see a doctor. He felt it was probably arthritis. He had other aches and pains, of course, like any 82-year-old, and didn't, frankly, want to deal with it, wanted to hope it would go away. I think we all do that sometimes. As recently as the middle of November, Denny and Dick and I went out for dinner and had a fun evening together, the three of us just chit-chatting and sharing an evening together, and it was great fun. But Dick continued to worsen, and sometime in the beginning of December, he lost the use of his legs entirely, and it was only then that he agreed to go and have his problem looked at. Well, the verdict was that the cancer had come back, and not only had the cancer come back, but it had attacked his spine. So we knew that Dick didn't have long to live. He had begun to undergo radiation treatment, and I'm sure that that could not have been all that pleasant for him. Though we, of course, were very encouraging of him, and we would always tease him that, oh, you're going to outlive all of us. You're the one who gets all the exercise. And up until, you know, very recently, he was a very, very active man. He would go swimming in the summer every day and, you know, kept himself in pretty good shape for 82. And he took good care of himself. Losing his mobility was a very difficult thing for Dick, as you might well imagine, especially somebody as active as he was. And I would like to say that he took his disability with grace and poise and was calm and collected, but that it wasn't Dick. That wasn't his personality, and he was a basket case, and he was stressed out, and he often spoke about how nothing would be right again. And quite frankly, he spoke often about wanting to die. And then early in the morning, on January the 11th, he did. So I've been having discussions, and this didn't start recently. This has been going on for some time. I've had discussions with Scott from the Scott podcast about how an atheist views death. Now, Dick was an atheist, as is Denny, as am I. There's a notion, of course, among Christians that, you know, you should find comfort in death. And that you're going to be with the Lord, and that you're going to get your eternal reward, and so ever. And atheists don't have that simple answer to everything. We don't have the comfortable platitudes to make us feel better. We don't see death as perhaps a glorious thing. But on the other side of that coin, I also don't think that most atheists fear death. Because the view of death that I have, and certainly the view of death that Dick had and that Denny had, is that death is the natural consequence of having lived. That death is a slow fade to black, and then the curtain comes down and the audience goes home. And we don't fear death in the same way that a religious person does, because the religious person is always going to be worried, are they going to be punished forever in hell? Or are they going to measure up and go to heaven? And, you know, we don't see it that way. I see Dick Tippett as having been a good person. He was highly intelligent. He wrote theater criticism. He was very well read, very intelligent conversationalist. He had a loving family. Denny loved him very much. He had good friends. He was a bit irascible at times. He was high-strung, complained a lot. But that was his personality. That was something that we understood about him. And we still cared for him anyway. So I'm sad to see Dick go. You know, he was not a big part of my life, but he was a part of my life. And he was somebody who, you know, I did socialize with and enjoy the company of, even though he's many, many years older than me. But he made Denny happy. And they were a good couple together. And I had had a discussion with Scott about this topic, and his suggestion was that maybe do atheists somehow feel the loss of somebody less keenly than other people? And I was a little bit offended. I was a little bit put out by that. Because as atheists, we understand that death is the end of life. We're not going to see our lost loved ones again. There is no heaven or no hell. Logic tells us that reincarnation is impossible. So we're not going to encounter these people ever again. They're gone. And that does actually have some pretty profound reverberations for people who do not believe in an afterlife. Now, of course, nobody knows what's beyond the grave. This is something that's unknowable. Nobody's ever come back to tell us. But we don't think there's anything there. It would be, I guess, a pleasant surprise were we to die and then find all of our loved ones waiting for us there. I suppose that's a pleasant fantasy. It can make you feel better, maybe. But as atheists and as rationalists, we don't count on that. And it makes us value people more when they're alive, I think. Knowing that we're not going to see them again makes us sadder when they die. Maybe we miss them more. Because we know that there's no way that we're ever going to see them again. And I think that, you know, the lesson to be learned from the life of Dick Tippett is to make the most of it. You know, he had a full career. He had, you know, like I said, a loving family, had a life partner who was devoted to him. He could play the piano and he enjoyed that. He loved musical theater and opera. You know, I think he had a pretty happy existence overall, but we're going to miss him. And I suppose that's really what I'm trying to say here. The email address for the show, if you'd like to contact me, is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I always love hearing from people. I really do. And it's been really nice over the last few weeks that I've had such an influx of email from people. I do very much appreciate it because it does actually give me stuff to talk about, which is always nice. You know, and it's quite often I don't know what to talk about, and your input gives me ideas. It gives me inspiration, or, you know, sometimes even it's a podcast, you know, something I'd hear on Ross Patzalt's show, or something that Chris Reardon might mention, that might make me think of, oh, you know, I should talk about this, or I should talk about that. And it definitely is a good break for me to keep from having to talk about, you know, my boring old life and what's going on with me, because it's really, you know, like all these shows, is about you too. And certainly if you're listening for the first time, if you're listening on United Kingdom Radio, or you're coming over here because you heard me on Post-it Cast, or you heard me on the Legion of Substitute Podcasters, or, you know, or any of the other podcasts that I contribute to, I say welcome, and I would love to hear from you. Love getting emails. And if you are on Facebook, there is a Tom Harris USA podcast community that you can join if you don't feel comfortable with asking to be my Facebook friend. Now, if I know who you are and you request to be my Facebook friend, more than likely you're going to get added. Because even if I think I kind of know who you are, I quite often will add the people. And, so it is nice. And, please feel free to contact me. Anyway, I'm out of time, so I gotta go. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. This is Tom at Tom Harris USA signing off.